Now, let's begin chapter 21. And we find in this chapter there are three different prophecies. The first 10 verses are a prophecy concerning the overthrow of Babylon. Now, let's look just for a moment at the circumstances about Babylon. Babylon is not on our map. It's way over to the east, the lower part, and to the east of where our map is there. And it is the country, the nation, that was to be an all-powerful nation about this time. It would not only be all-powerful, but it would also conquer this big kingdom of Assyria and all the country that it had taken. And it would also conquer Judea and carry God's people into captivity. And you know, that's really what the gist of the whole prophecy of Isaiah is about, warning these people that they're going to be carried into captivity if some changes aren't made. And of course, the changes weren't made, and they were carried away into captivity. But God sprinkles in this prophecy several places. We've already had a couple of chapters that dealt with it. Several places that indicate very strongly that Babylon, in the end, Babylon is going to be destroyed. The destruction of Babylon itself. And so Babylon, then the great power which captured God's people and hauled them away from their country into captivity and held them there for 70 years, even Babylon is going to be destroyed itself. And this city and this country of Babylon then has become a symbol of evil, a symbol of the great force that would draw God's people away and capture God's people and take them away from their true inheritance. And it's even true right down in the church age today, Babylon, there is still a power that is represented today that is symbolic of Babylon. And we'll talk about it before we get through with this chapter. So let's look at what he says now about Babylon. The burden of the desert of the sea. The word burden, of course, is a very typical phrase. He uses it over and over, indicating a prophecy. In other words, if somebody were going to write you a letter and tell you that the doom and destruction was going to come upon you, you would look upon that letter as being a burden for you to bear. You know, we say a lot of times, I'm sure glad I can't see into the future, because if we could just see what's going to happen in the future, we probably just couldn't stand to know about it. Well, these prophecies are that very thing. They were something given that was going to happen in the future, and it was a burden. So the burden of the desert of the sea. Now, the word desert here really means Babylon. It stands for a deserted or a desolate area. And the word sea is another word for probably the Euphrates River, which ran right through Babylon and right through the city of Babylon. Desert doesn't have to be a dry area. It can be a marshy area. But it's one that is deserted of civilization and habitation by man. And originally this country of Babylon was a marshy area. And then whenever the Euphrates River was built up by dikes to hold the water within the channel of the river, the marshes dried up and it became a productive land. But whenever this river had the dikes torn down by Cyrus, then the waters again flowed out and made a marshy area, and some of our prophecies, you know, in the earlier part of Isaiah related to that, and it became a place that was not habited. Well, this is the burden of the desert of the sea, that is, the burden of Babylon by this Euphrates River. As the whirlwinds in the south pass through, so cometh from the desert, from a terrible land. Now, Babylon was located just north of Arabia, and that was certainly a dry, arid, desertous area. And it was quite common for these whirlwinds to come from the south up out of that desert into Babylon. And so he says here, as whirlwinds in the south pass through. That's the way the destruction is going to come on Babylon, just like a whirlwind from the south that's passing through. Now, you know, even today, with all of the modern technology that we don't have any way to stop a whirlwind. If you could look out there and see a whirlwind coming a mile off, about the best thing you can do to be to run or to protect yourself somewhere, because you're not going to stop it. There is no power that we have to stop a whirlwind. First of all, it comes unexpectedly, unannounced, and you just can't have a barricade that would be big enough and sufficient enough to stop it. Well, that's the way that the invasion is going to come on Babylon. As the whirlwind comes up from the south, he said, so cometh from the desert, from a terrible land. Now, this desert here, secondly, the second word for desert, really is talking about the country of the Medes. And from a terrible land, and the words terrible land mean a rough country, a country that is not developed, that is not civilized, that is inhabited by a rough and unscrupulous type of people. So this is the way the invasion is going to come upon them. A grievous vision is declared unto me. Now this is Isaiah. He's seeing this vision. He said it's a grievous vision. It has some terrible images here. And so he gives us some of the benefit of what he sees. The treacherous dealer dealeth treacherously. And the spoiler spoileth. Well, if we just knew somebody that was a treacherous dealer, and then we would see that he is dealing treacherously, we'd say, well, he's practicing the thing that he knows how to do best. If the cheater is cheating, if the thief is robbing and stealing, we'd say, well, we know what he's doing. Well, here the treacherous dealer dealeth treacherously. And this word for treacherous really means violence. And the spoiler spoileth. Now this is probably talking about the kingdom of Media. And they were rough people. They dealt in a treacherous way. And some of those places, even today in modern history, and I was just reading about it in National Geographic the other night, they say that travelers don't get off of the main roads. You don't get off on the little windy roads and visit around in the little back villages over there, because you just disappear and won't ever be heard from again. You stay out in the main, well-beaten pathways. These people are still treacherous dealers, and they still deal treacherously, and they still are spoilers. So then he names it. Go up, O Elam. Besiege, O Media. And the word here, Elam, really means Persia. And, of course, Media, he names that kingdom. So he's naming the kingdoms that are going to be involved here. There's no question about what this prophecy is talking about. He names the kingdoms. Go up, O Elam. Besiege, O Media. All the sighing thereof have I made to cease. Now that's a real difficult phrase to interpret. All the sighing thereof have I made to cease. But probably one of the most logical interpretations of that is that Babylon, in all of its dealings with God's people and with the other nations, taking them into captivity, making them prisoners, hauling them out of their land, and using their land for other purposes, had caused a lot of sighing, a lot of grief. And so when Babylon is overthrown by Media and Persia, then all the sighing thereof have I made to cease. That is, the sighing of the captives of Babylon would cease when Babylon then itself was made a captive. Now, Elam, as we said, means Persia. Elam was a son of Shem, who, of course, was a son of Noah. Therefore, verse 3, are my loins filled with pain. As Isaiah sees this vision, he now becomes a witness of what's going to happen. It's as though God took Isaiah and planted him over there in Babylon on that fateful occasion and said, now Isaiah, you look and see what is happening and you record this vision as you see it. And so as Isaiah saw this, he says, my loins are filled with pain. Pangs have taken hold upon me as the pangs of a woman that travaileth. In other words, Isaiah said, it's just like a woman who's fixing to have a baby. A woman who is in the act of parturition. I feel those pains, just like the pains of her. There's no escape from it. It's going to happen, regardless of how I would want to put it off, how I would dread to see it. It's going to happen. But yet, as a result of those pains, of course, a child is born, and much joy and happiness does happen as a result of it, although nobody enjoyed the pains. And so it is with this case of Babylon. God's people are fixing to be freed by Babylon's captivity, And Isaiah describes it this way, as the pangs of a woman that travaileth. I was bowed down at the hearing of it. I was dismayed at the seeing of it. As I saw and as I heard this, why, I was bowed down. I was dismayed. My heart panted. Fearfulness affrighted me. Now, this word for heart really means mind, and the word for panted really means staggered. And so he's saying, my mind staggered. Fearfulness affrighted me. The night of my pleasure hath he turned into fear unto me. Now that's a very interesting phrase, as is the next verse. The night of my pleasure hath he turned into fear unto me. And the word for pleasure here really means revelry. The night of my revelry hath he turned into fear unto me. Now, as we read Daniel 5, and you know we studied Daniel 5, the fifth chapter, and we want to turn to it and read a little bit from it here. And we have a tape on that study if anybody would like to get it sometime and review it. As we, though, read Daniel, the fifth chapter, we begin to see what Isaiah is saying here. Let's turn to Daniel, the fifth chapter, just for a moment. What happened when, on the occasion of Babylon's overthrow, the king of Babylon, whose name was Belshazzar, he had a big banquet that night for the whole city of Babylon. And it was a night of drunken revelry. And while they were having this drunken banquet, then Cyrus, the king of the Medes, invaded the city. Now, how did he invade the city? He broke down the dikes of the Euphrates River. He diverted the water so that it would leave the channel of the river. And this left then the wall in which the river ran under the wall. It left the wall exposed above the riverbed on the north and on the south of the city. And men entered in under the wall and the riverbed on the north. They entered in under the south. And they just practically had the city taken before the inhabitants of Babylon knew there was any trouble because of their drunken revelry. He picked the very best time that he could have. And so let's look at Daniel 5 and read a few verses here. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Now this is when Babylon was reigning at its most supreme moment. It had had these captives now from Israel for about 70 years. And so Belshazzar made the great feast for 1,000 of his lords. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Now what he did is he took the golden vessels that came out of the temple of the Lord up there at Jerusalem, he took those vessels and desecrated them. He poured wine in them, and they drank in this drunken feast out of the precious vessels of the temple of the Lord. Of course, he wasn't a follower of God anyway. He was a heathen man. But this is what he did to those things that belonged in the temple at Jerusalem. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver and of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone.